there once again, and welcome to another story-filled episode of Musings on Golf. I'm Kelly Elpin, along with my co-host and good buddy, Bob Bupka. And folks, I got to tell you, this is one of those shows where it's kind of tough to figure out where to start. Scottie Scheffler wins yet again on the PGA Tour. Becomes the first player since Bernhard Langer to win the first event after the Masters. We've got the ultimate NFL insider and huge golf fan, Adam Schefter of ESPN, is our guest this week. But Bob, the conversation must begin, has to begin with Nelly Korda, who wins her fifth consecutive event on the LPGA Tour, tying Nancy Lopez and Annika for that all-time mark, wins the Chevron Championship for the second time, her second major. Wow, is she ever on a heater?
Oh, she really is, and she's so good for the LPGA Tour. A wonderful ambassador for the game. I'm looking forward already. Next week, we have an opportunity to spend some time with both Nancy Lopez and Annika Sorenstam. I'd be anxious to get their opinion on what Nelly's doing. Of course, tied their record. She's going to take a week off, I understand, Kelly, and then come back and go for her sixth win in a row on starts on the LPGA Tour. Really good for the ladies' game. And, you know, they're getting better and better and better. You know, Kelly, just the sheer numbers on Nelly have been absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they really have been, Bob. You know, she, first of all, interesting situation, which is not unusual on any tour. They had some rains in Houston, not far from where you are, on Saturday. So she had to play her last seven holes on Sunday morning for her third round, and she was a shot back. It didn't take her long. She had four birdies in her first 11 holes. She went, by the way, 39 consecutive holes in a major golf championship without making a bogey. And with those four birdies, that really put her in control of the tournament. She had eight wins, by the way, eight LPGA Tour wins, Bob, going into this year. Her biggest yearly win had been in 2021 when she won four times. She's already eclipsed that to get to 13. And Bob, what a great story. I mean, Nelly Korda had a blood clot in her arm in 2022 and took some extended time off. She was really worried about her health in general, much less how she might play. But Bob, she's the daughter of a professional tennis player. So athletic, she's a young woman. She may not even be in the prime of her career, Bob. She keeps this focus, this playing level. It's going to be a heck of a career for Nelly Korda.
No doubt about it, but no one can reasonably expect her to win every time out. That she's done it five times in a row is remarkable. I think there'll be a lot of added pressure the next time because nobody's ever won six in a row on the LPGA Tour. But, hey, I like her chances right now. She's a real sweetheart. And really good for the game. And that's what I love the most about Nelly Korda.
Yeah, and so she's going to go for six in a row at the Cognizant Founders Cup in New Jersey, May 9 through 12. That'll be her next start. And Bob, I really can't remember two dominant players, men and women, at the same time on the respective tours as we're seeing with Nelly and with Scottie Scheffler. Maybe it was, you know, Annika when in 2005, when she won five in a row, you know, about the same time as Tiger, but almost simultaneously to have this run. How impressed are you with Scheffler, particularly coming off winning a major championship where it can be a letdown? Man, he didn't let down in any way, did he?
Yeah, not only could it be a letdown, just look at his personal situation. His wife, Meredith, expecting their first child any day. He wins the Masters. Who would have argued that he said, hey, look, I'm not going to go to Hilton Head. You know, I'm not going to play in the RBC. But he fulfilled his commitment. He said he was going to go there. He goes there, as you alluded to in the past, first player since Bernhard Langer, win the Masters, then win RBC. I mean, that's the kind of guy Scottie Scheffler is. And then even gets a little more bad luck because of the weather. He had to finish up on Monday, so he didn't get home back to Dallas to be with Meredith until sometime early Monday afternoon. Hats off to Scottie. He's just great, great, great for the game right now.
Yeah, that win at RBC was his 11th win worldwide in his last 51 events, which is pretty amazing. He has started the year, Bob. People have probably seen this. He's played his first 39 rounds of the 2024 campaign under par. 39 in a row. Remarkable string. And let's hear what Scotty had to say about that victory in Hilton Head.
You know, I committed to play here. It was part of the plan. And so we stuck to the plan and didn't show up here just to have some sort of ceremony and have everybody tell me congratulations and whatnot. I came here with a purpose and got off to a bit of a slow start. But after that, I played some really nice golf. I'm looking at the leaderboard on Thursday and everybody's just making birdie after birdie. And I'm sitting there over par and I've had a shank on the day. And, you know, I just did my best to stay patient and kind of waited until I got hot and had a nice finish to the round on Thursday and then had a really solid Friday where I felt like I played better than I scored. And then I had Saturday where I just played some really good golf, had a lot of opportunities, made some putts and posted a nice number. And then, you know, I got off to a good start yesterday and kind of just kept it going from there. I am prepared when I step up there on the first tee and I want to play well. And so when things aren't going the way that I feel like they should, it can be very frustrating. And so I think that's part of the constant battle within myself is, you know, making sure I stay in the present. Don't get too high, don't get too low. And I feel like I've been doing a pretty good job of that. I think hitting a really well-struck golf shot close to the pin is like an addicting feeling. I think that's something that's cool about the game is that's what keeps everybody coming back. You know, golf's a game that drives people nuts. And then all of a sudden you hit this great shot and it feels wonderful and it flies right up there by the pin and it just gives everybody hope.
Can all relate to that last one, can't we, Bob, about seeing that well-struck shot?
You've been able to do that quite a bit recently, playing some good golf. You know what has to be motivating to Scotty Scheffler? How about on the Korn Ferry Tour? There's a guy out there, Miles Russell. He's only 15 years old. He now has earned another start in a Korn Ferry event because he finished in the top 25 in his last event. Can you imagine that? And he's the youngest to finish in the top 25 on record. Only 15 years old, playing with some of the best golfers in the world and a top 25 finish. I don't know much about Miles Russell right now, but I guarantee you he keeps going like he is. He's going to be a future guest on Musings on Golf.
I don't know a lot about him either, but I am not necessarily surprised, Bob. The depth of talent, the depth of young people who play golf and are coached well. Look at Randy Smith. We've talked about Randy and what he's done to create the game, the mentality of Scotty Scheffler. There's a lot of Miles Russells out there, I'm telling you. There's so many good players. Hey, I got to ask you something before we talk about the Zurich event this week. Tiger Woods and Scotty Scheffler certainly are very different players in there, the way they hit the ball, et cetera. Up from a mental makeup, seems to be a lot of that, a lot of Tiger in Scotty in that he doesn't get flustered. Like he was saying, he saw a lot of birdies going up on the board. He was over par, and yet he's kind of nonplussed about the whole thing. He just goes about what he does, and look what happens with that 63 on Saturday that kind of blew it all open.
Well, I've said this for a long time, and I think it would help every one of our listeners that play this wonderful game of golf. The secret formula, the secret sauce that Tiger Woods put in effect to accomplish what he has with his 15 majors. When he tees off, I would say 99.9% of the people that play the game, they go out with the anticipation of making some birdies. Tiger has a completely different approach. Mm-hmm. His goal, he doesn't want to make a bogey. He'll fight so hard not to make a bogey and sometimes have to make a 10-foot, 15-foot putt to save par. And he gets more out of that than the birdies come easy. So as a listener of Musings on Golf, and we certainly appreciate you coming, and we're growing in terms of listeners more and more each week, and we're very happy about that. Next time you go out to play, just put in your head, I'm not going to make a bogey today, and see if that helps you around.
Right, and scratch and claw and do everything mentally to grind it out, which Tiger was the ultimate grinder, almost even more than Jack. You look at the number of consecutive cuts he made through the years. It's a great advice. Okay, we're going to hear from Adam Schefter of ESPN in just a minute. Bob and I talked with Adam a couple weeks ago. Great interview. And we've got the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. But before we get to Adam, Bob, we've got the Zurich Classic this week. The first and really only team event on the calendar for the PGA Tour. Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry are paired together. Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele are paired together. And it's fun. It's a kind of a breath of fresh air on the PGA Tour. But you've, I believe, a New Orleans story of an experience you had there that may be outside of the golf course itself.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I was covering the event in New Orleans and was in the locker room. I had a friend of mine from Long Island by the name of Bruce Zabriskie, outstanding golfer, that was in the field. And I saw this little table, and it said flight to the Masters, because the Masters was coming up the following week that year. So I stopped and I said, what's this all about? And they said, we got a charter leaving on Sunday night, going right to Augusta for the players and their caddies. And I said, how much is it? And they said, $200. I said to myself, wait a minute, I already have a ticket, but I'd rather fly on this charter with the players and, you know, nonstop New Orleans, Augusta. So I get on the plane, and all of a sudden the guy comes by and he said, you want to play some blackjack, Bupka? And I looked up, and it was none other than Payne Stewart. So Payne had organized a blackjack game in the back of the plane. He's the dealer. He's the house. I wasn't doing too well. The cards weren't running my way. And suddenly I started to think to myself, what am I doing? Payne Stewart just won $88,000 playing golf last week. I earned whatever I earned being a member of the media, but it certainly wasn't. It was more like $88 than $88,000. But I always remember that and got a chuckle every time I would hit and bust. Payne said, well, you should have stayed. I said, Payne, you're killing me here. And that's my wonderful memory from being in New Orleans. Never forget the one and great Payne Stewart.
And it is a wonderful memory. I miss that guy, Bob. All these years later, of, you know, the way that unfortunate way that he passed away, what he was, what he meant to the game, would have been a Ryder Cup captain, but he had just a real just an aura about him with the plus fours and the whole look and the NFL logoed hats and shirts wherever he might be in a certain tour event. Speaking of the NFL, real quick, Adam Schefter is you know, we're Bob. A lot of our listeners are NFL fans, and they recognize the name Adam Schefter very well. You're going to hear some great stories from Adam. He also touches on Chris Mortensen, his dear friend and mentor, who really brought him into ESPN after the years that he had worked at NFL Network. And it was rather emotional, I think. But I like having guys and ladies on from outside golf who are big golf fans. It kind of gives our show a little different perspective, Bob.
It certainly does. And Adam's terrific. And I know our listeners are going to really enjoy what he has to say.
And they're going to hear from Adam Schefter of ESPN right after these messages. Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass. Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, in just 2 days, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell will call to order the 89th NFL Draft in Detroit. And our guest today will once again play a major role in communicating where the future stars of the league will be playing. Once the draft is over, though, we'll be trying to find time to play the great game of golf all the while keeping his trusty phone nearby just in case. What a treat to welcome ESPN's NFL insider, Adam Schefter, to Musings on Golf. Adam, thanks for joining us. How you doing, man?
Gentlemen, an honor to be with you today. Always happy to talk about golf. If I'm not going to be talking about football, might as well be talking about that.
Well, Adam, certainly a pleasure to have you join us on Musings. And I got to share something with you. I heard a story a long time ago about a kindergarten teacher asking her student, what's the greatest invention of all time? And he said, thermos. The teacher said, thermos? What's so great about a thermos? He said, well, you put something hot in it, it keeps it hot. You put something cold in it, it keeps it cold. She says, so? He says, how do it know? And that's what I think of every time, Adam, you come on the air. I say, how do he know all that stuff? Can you give us a little insight to what do you have, a million sources or a crystal ball? Or, what are some of the things you utilize to come up with the valuable information that you put out?
Well, thank you. I always like to say that you're only as good as the people who are thinking of you with some of this information. And obviously, I've been doing this now for 35 years, so there are a lot of people that I've been fortunate to know for a long period of time. There are a lot of really nice, thoughtful people. And the great part about my job is I feel like I get to be a little bit choosy and selective in who I speak to and who I don't. And so I try to always speak to the best and the brightest. And I feel like I've been able to weed through that a little bit. And you can tell who's really impressive. And again, it's my honor to be able to talk to and discuss football issues like this upcoming draft with some of the smartest people that I believe are in the game.
How about taking us back? We know that you have an extreme passion for the sport of golf. Golf is very contagious. It gets in your blood. It stays a lifetime. How'd you get started in golf?
Well, first of all, I love watching it more than I love playing it because it doesn't take as much effort and coordination to sit on the couch and watch these guys do what they do, which is so impressive, as opposed to being out there and tearing up a golf course. But when I was little, I used to play with my grandfather, who I loved very much, and he was very much into golf and really the only person in my family that I knew that was into golf. And he lived in a little condo out east in Medford, Long Island, and he had a little par three course in this condominium complex that he lived in. And we go out there. And at that point, you know, I'm 13, 12, 13, 14, I didn't know what I was doing. I still don't know what I'm doing, but I'd go out there and I just whack the ball. And he was amused at his age that I could hit it as far as I could, just not because I was any good, but because I was just youthful. And it was always a great thrill for me to be out with him on the golf course. And I could remember, you know, certain little outings. We didn't play a ton, but we probably through the years played, I would say, 10, 12 rounds. In addition to those times where we would go to the driving range and we go to the par three course, and we must have hit it around a lot more than the 12 rounds than we did. And so, I never took lessons. I never got very good at it. I've never mastered the sport. You know, it's funny. My daughter was talking about trying out for her high school golf team. She's in ninth grade. And so she's been out a couple of times. And a couple of weeks back, I took her out. And I said, well, what do you want to work on as we were going to the driving range? She said, I just very simply, very naively, she goes, well, I just want to go master it. I said, oh, you want to go master the sport in your third session on the drive? Great. Well, let's go master the sport then. So again, I've been playing for a long time. And the problem with my job is that, you know, to be good at this sport, you got to play it consistently. And I just can't, not at this stage of my life. You know, one day when I get done with this job, I'll be able to play a little bit more often. It's a case where now, like I said, you got to play often. You got to practice it. I don't have the time. I don't have the patience to do that. So, like I said, it's easier to watch it than it is to play it. I do enjoy playing it, but again, the problem you run into is that when you don't play it and you're not playing well, then you go out there and you're like, I got to go invest four and a half hours now. Like, what am I doing? Like, there's better uses for my time. But I will say this, like, I'm in this golf pool with my friends, and I've been in this golf pool for 3 years. And in addition to fantasy golf that I played for even longer than that. And I could, you're allowed to pick one golfer each week. You can't pick that guy again the rest of the year. And so whatever he wins, you get the corresponding point total. So if Scottie Scheffler wins the Players, as he did, and he makes $4.5 million, as he did, you get 4.5 million points for picking him, as we did. So to watch him win the Players that Sunday was honestly a huge, huge adrenaline rush. And I watched every shot of Scottie Scheffler's from Thursday to Sunday. It was agonizing when on Friday he's grabbing his neck and I think he's going WD. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. The first tournament of the year, we're going to be out using the best golfer. We're done. You know, we're out of this pool already. And he comes back and he wins it. And it was exhilarating, truly. And so I love watching it because once we pick our golfer each week, it's 24 straight weeks. Literally, I can watch every shot that that golfer hits. And if I don't mind plugging ESPN Plus, great invention, you go track your guy. And I will agonize over every shot that that guy hits for four straight days, assuming he makes the cut, which Sam Burns didn't the next week after the Players. We had Sam Burns that week. So that bummed me out. Now we can't use Sam Burns the rest of the year. He missed the last putt on the last hole to miss the cut. It ruined my weekend. It was awful. And I live and die with these guys as they're making or missing each shot.
Well, I will get on the phone right after this interview with Wyndham Clark.
And I love him.
I know why that putt didn't go in that hole on the 72nd hole, because somebody was rooting for Scottie Scheffler.
Hey, listen, Wyndham's from Denver, and he knows some people that I know. I've never had the chance to meet him. And again, I will say this, like, one of the great thrills has been, on the rare occasion, I've gotten to meet some of these guys who I have great respect for. I've gotten to text with some of their caddies, some fancy football information. And I think there's this natural respect and curiosity from people out of your line of work, right? So if there's a musician that steps into the football world on Monday Night Countdown, they come to the set, they love to be around the guys. Just like if I were to go to a music concert, I'd love to be around there. And just like when I go to the Masters, or I went to the Waste Management when the Super Bowl was in Phoenix last year, and I was hanging out in the area and I got to meet some of the golfers and talk to some of them, like, oh my God, I love that. That was awesome to me. And it was just a huge thrill that I had, you know, to meet some of the guys that I'm rooting for. And again, I'm fully invested in a different guy every single week. So at one point or another during the season, I am rooting for, I'm never rooting against anybody. I want to be very clear. I think that that's bad karma, but I am rooting really hard for one golfer every single week for 24 straight weeks.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up on Long Island.
Where?
South Shore, Belmore.
Huh.
Have you hear of it?
Hear of it. I grew up in Sag Harbor.
Yeah, well, that's very funny. You want to hear a great story, Bob?
What?
My wife and I, when I lived in Denver and moved back, I sold my house in Denver. And with the money that I had, she owned a house on Long Island. I went to go buy a house. We bought a house in Sag Harbor. And Bob, how about this? Where in Sag Harbor do you live? Or do you live? Do you still live? Have a house there now?
No. I lived on Jermaine Avenue about 500 yards from Pearson High School.
So I have an idea of where that is. We were in a little place called North Haven.
Yeah, North Haven. Yeah, that's where the rich people had houses.
Here's rich people. This was 2008. I didn't have very much money.
Jimmy Buffett lived in North Haven. So you went pretty.
He did?
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's the great story. Here's the great story. It's a true story I've told to people. We were on our honeymoon. And my wife doesn't like to fly or travel very much. We went to Vermont, and we got back. We were on the last night of our honeymoon. We watched one movie, And don't give away the ending here, Bob, if you know where I'm going to go, okay? Because I'm going to say something. We watched this movie, Heartburn, that Nora Ephron wrote about her husband, Carl Bernstein, and when he had an affair while she was pregnant and they got divorced, and it was a great movie. So we watched that movie the last night of our honeymoon. My wife wanted to watch it. She loved it. So the next day we go to our new house in Sag Harbor that we just bought, and my wife arranged all these deliveries, and we're in this quiet little cul-de-sac with all these deliveries and all this noise on a Friday morning, 9 a.m. And all of a sudden there's a knock on our door the night after we got back from our honeymoon and watched the movie on Heartburn. There's a knock on the door, and I open the front door with all the noise going on. And the guy goes, "Do you live here?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "I'm your neighbor, Carl Bernstein." And I go, "The Carl Bernstein?" And he said, "I guess." And he was pissed off that we were creating such a ruckus in the cul-de-sac, because he lives in Sag Harbor too, right, Bob?
He does.
Yeah, exactly. And he lived next door, and him and my wife did not get along very well. My wife was not very happy of the fact that he was not very accepting of all the deliveries and all the noise that the kids made in the pool. He was complaining about how loud it was. And yeah, we bought and sold that house within 1 year, in part because of him.
You know what? Growing up as a kid, East Hampton and Southampton were, those were the places to live. Sag Harbor was a stepchild. Then all of a sudden, people realize that, hey, if I live in Sag Harbor, I can walk down Long Wharf. I can be amongst all those yachts. I can't do that if I'm living in East Hampton or Southampton. And those yachts are unbelievable. Matter of fact, at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock the last time, Adam, Tiger Woods had come with his private yacht, which was only 198 feet. And in the media conference, I raised my hand to ask a question. And I know Tiger very well. And Tiger said, "What do you want to know, Bob?" I said, "I want to know, Tiger, how it feels to have one of the smallest yachts in the harbor."
There you go, right?
He cracked up. But Sag Harbor is a jewel beyond jewels. And I grew up playing golf, and they had a 9-hole golf course with sand greens.
Wow. How about that?
That's where I learned to play golf. Hey, let's get
out. In Sag Harbor, huh?
In Sag Harbor.
Good for you, Go ahead, Bob.
Kelly, bail me out here. I'm having too much fun.
No, this is hey, this
I,
is
I,
great
I
stuff.
Learned how I learned how to get into neighborhood altercations in Sag Harbor.
Too good, Adam. Too good.
Hey, we're joined by the great Adam Schefter of ESPN here on Musings on Golf. Hey, okay, so you made it clear you watch a lot of golf, but when you do play, and with your phone constantly, as your companion. It has to have rung during certain rounds of golf. How do you deal with that when you're trying to get away from everything and business intercedes?
Well, that's the problem. It's another problem with playing, right? I can watch and I can get a call that something's happening and I'm get distracted. I might miss a shot of one of my golfers. But if you're playing, and I've had this happen, I try to play, let's say, a half dozen rounds a year from post-draft till training camp begins in late July, right?
Yeah, it's very I've got compact a window. Period of time, right?
Yeah, I've got a window from, let's just say, May 1 to July 21. Yeah. So it's a two plus month period. And again, it's hard to go out, and it just takes a lot of time. And we've got, two kids and five dogs, and I'm just not at the stage where I can just do that and leave right now. I'd like to play more than I do. I'm not good enough to have it warrant. And I don't have enough time to practice it to get good enough. So it's just a whole combination of factors that limit the amount of time that I actually do play. But that is my window. And it does happen that when you're on the course, again, I've been on the sixth hole, because when you're playing, you just want to be able to focus on that and concentrate and kind of lose yourself in that round. It's not asking very much, and that's how it needs to be done. And I would say that my success rate of being able to do that is about I would 33%, like one in every three rounds gets disrupted by something, even at that quiet time of the year where you get a call. You know, I remember one time I'm playing and Baker Mayfield gets traded to Carolina. It happens. And it destroys the vibes and the mood and the moment of the day when that happens. And so, you know, you try to go out at times when that won't happen, maybe on a weekend, but again, I don't have exposure or access always on a weekend to certain places. So it just depends, but it does happen. My rounds do get interrupted. And when it does happen, I say, why am I doing this to myself? Like, it detracts from the experience.
Hey, I love the story though about you playing with your grandfather growing up, and those memories. Those are the cool memories, right? The things you can look back on. I wonder, has there been a more recent standout moment, whether it's a particular shot you hit, playing with your daughter, playing a particular course, anything that jumps out?
Of a great golf moment that I've had, right? You know, back when I lived in Denver, and again, this was when it was also simpler. My life wasn't as consumed with work as it is now. I was single at the time. So we're talking about the time that I was, say, 23 to 38 before I moved back to New York, when I was covering at that time just the Denver Broncos for first the Rocky Mountain News and then the Denver Post. So after the draft, literally, there wasn't anything or any place other to go than to play golf. And I played 5 times a week. And I was shooting in the high 80s or low 90s. Not like Bob, but not bad. And and so that was fun because you'd hit some really good shots back then. And even back then, there were a group of guys that, you know, these married couples, and I would be the only one. And one of the guys, Ira Miller, a longtime football writer, he would book these little golf trips to Scotland or Ireland. And we went on a few of those that were memorable, where you're playing every day. And again, even there, your game could go south so quickly. Like, I remember being in Ireland and I was in a rut and I couldn't get going. And there's nothing more frustrating or maddening than when you're playing bad golf, especially when you're in Ireland, right? Like, it was frustrating as all heck to go do that. But those are the kinds of things that stand out to me. You know, is there a particular shot? Back in Denver, I had a lot of good shots back then because I was playing pretty good and you're playing at altitude and you could smack the ball further than the average person. But again, I've never been an exceptional golfer. I've never come close to breaking 80. I would love to do that one day. I've never had a hole in one. That would be on my bucket list of things. If I could just get a hole in one, I would be over the moon. You know, I don't care how short the hole would be. It doesn't matter. A hole in one's a hole in one, anytime, anywhere. I was actually covering Michelle Wie when she first started in Hawaii. I don't know how this would be, but I was working for one of the newspapers in Denver, and she was standing on a par three and she smacked one. I was turning around talking to someone and I heard all of a sudden, I heard everyone screaming. I'm like, hole in one. I'm like, I turned to Michelle, have you ever had one of those? I had 6 of them. I'm like, oh, you know,
it's just another hole in one, right?
Yeah, just another hole in one. Like, I would love to get one hole in one in my lifetime.
You know, it's amazing, Adam. I was at that event that you covered at Sony.
In Hawaii?
In Hawaii.
Where she had the hole in one?
Yeah.
We
used to go, well, for 20 years, we covered Tournament of Champions on Maui at the Plantation course. It's just incredible. And then we'd go over to Honolulu and stay there. And let me ask you something. This is
all. Hold on. So Bob and I, like, our paths have crossed in Sag Harbor and Maui, great. But we never met until today. That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It's a thrill for me. Let me ask you this, Adam. With what's happening in college now, where these players are getting so much money, is that going to affect people that want to go to the NFL? Is the NFL going to have to kick up more money because they're making so much as a collegian?
Well, I think what you're going to see here is, and not so much this year with this draft, but you're going to see guys in future years. Well, you're already starting to see it. They're not coming out because the NIL money is big enough.
Right.
Or you're going to see an instance at some point in time where a guy gets drafted by a team, and maybe it'll be next year with Deion Sanders and his son and Travis Hunter. They get drafted. And they get chosen in a certain place that they don't want to go for an organization they don't want to play for. And they say, you know what? We're not going. What do you mean not going? Well, we'll go back. We'll make $5, $6, $7 million in NIL money or whatever it is. And then we'll re-enter the draft the next year. Like, that's going to happen. I don't know if it's next year or the year after, but it's going to happen. It's going to, some player is going to decide, you're not going to tell me where I'm going. I'm going to have a little say in this as well, and I'm going to step back from this. So that's going to happen. That's going to be a story, a major story in the future. And by the way, we've seen certain players in certain years over time not wanting to go to certain places, like John Elway didn't want to go play for Robert Irsay in Baltimore, and Eli Manning didn't want to go join the Chargers. You're going to see more and more of that, I believe, over time. That's my sense.
Hey, Adam, Coach Prime has already hinted at that, like you said about two of his players. It's a distinct possibility, isn't it?
Yeah, no, he said, and I know Deion well enough to know I have an idea of some of the places he's talking about, where, like, if they're taking his son or Travis Hunter, they're just not going to go. They're just not going to go. And maybe, you know, he arranges it through NIL money to finance them or sponsor them, or they're doing commercials or whatever it may be. Yeah. But they're not going to go to certain places.
Kelly, I have to ask you to wrap this up because,
sure.
You know, because being together with him in Hawaii
is just too much.
The Sag Harbor connection.
Yeah.
I'm going to find out that he's a long lost relative and maybe I owe him money. So, what?
Bob, you do owe me money. You do.
That's the last part, right?
If you want to Venmo or Zell me the money, Bob, when we're done, that'd be my pleasure.
My pleasure has been to talk to you, and boy, you've been great, Kelly. Please do me justice.
Yeah. Hey, Adam, you've mentioned family. You mentioned about your daughter. Would you please talk a little bit about the book you wrote, The Man I Never Met, in 2018, and the incredible story behind it?
Well, thank you, Kelly. That was a book that I wrote as a tribute to my wife's late husband. She lost her husband on 9/11 when their son, who I helped raise, was six. Well, he was a year old at the time of 9/11. And then we got married. We met, he was six, got married, he was seven. And so that's why we called it The Man I Never Met, a memoir. Yep. And I had a tremendous writer, Michael Rosenberg, helped me out with that. And I've always kept a journal, and I've documented every day of my life. So I was able to give him my journal entries from the time that I met my wife and the time that we got married, and, you know, through some of the issues that have gone on, her giving birth to our daughter, whatever it may be, memorable moments. And so I wrote the book as a tribute to him. And what happened was, the way it started was, I remember saying to ESPN on, it was like the 10th anniversary of 9/11. Hey, you know, my wife lost her husband. We could do a little feature on him if you wanted. And they said, okay, thank you. And they didn't want to do that. And then for whatever reason, one of the producers, a guy by the name of Greg Jewell, came back to me and he said, you know what? We're going to do that piece on Joe Mayo on the 15th anniversary of 9/11, which happened to be on the first Sunday of the 2016 season, it would have been.
Right.
And so honestly, even when we were putting together, we have this great producer, Dominique, at ESPN, and we started doing it, didn't know how the piece was going to work. And I remember being on SportsCenter the Friday before it ran, and I got this text message from Greg Jewell, and he said, this is a piece that your children's children will get to see and remember Joe by. And it ran that day on the 15th anniversary of 9/11. And I remember when it ran, I walked up the set and my phone lit up like never before, with messages, people who had seen the piece texting, emailing, emails from people I'd never met in my life that were moved by the piece. And you could go watch it right now. All you have to do is Google in Adam Schefter tribute to Joe Mayo. And when the piece ran, after it ran, somebody's like, oh, you should turn it into a book. I'm like, turn it into a book? We're like, I don't know if we can do that. And we did. And the book came out, which the book was obviously an expanded version of the video piece that ran on ESPN. And so just a way to honor his memory and move forward like that. And so that's what we did.
Yeah. So just a couple more from me, Adam. And as a follow up to maybe this is a nice segue, if you will. You know, a lot of our listeners are big football fans. And mm-hmm. I know that they along myself really, really saddened with the passing of Chris Mortensen a month ago. We knew him mm-hmm. from ESPN. We knew him from a distance. He was your good friend. He was your colleague for a long, long time. Wonder if you might be able to share a story or just some thoughts about what made Mort so special to you, personally and professionally.
Well, I loved Mort, and we're going to have a celebration of his life here coming up after the draft in Arkansas. And I know it's going to be an emotional day for a lot of people that loved him, including me. And as I've told people, Mort was responsible for helping me come over to ESPN, and I wouldn't have been there were it not for him. My avatar on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, is a picture of me and him. And it's been that way really since I got to ESPN. And that was a commercial that he and I did together called Tipped Off, which we had taped a number of commercials for ESPN in the early years. He could not have been more welcoming to me. And he was somebody that was my good friend. He was my mentor. He was somebody that, look, here's the deal. I've been at ESPN now for 15 years. And this is the first draft this week that I will ever do without Mort sitting right next to me, right by my side. So for every draft that I've done at ESPN for 15 years, he physically, truly, literally has been at my side. Yeah. This was the first season, this past season, where he wasn't right at my side for Sunday NFL Countdown. It was a show that we had done together. He could understand my life better than anybody in my life, other than maybe Adrian Wojnarowski. Those two people are the only people who could truly understand. And when I was all worked up and stressed and intense about something, Mort was always the one that could make me laugh and just kind of lighten the mood, because he was an incredibly funny guy. And so, there are so many ways that he helped me, influenced me, supported me, guided me. I love the guy. He meant a lot. He was in any room he was in. He was not only the most credible, smartest guy, but he was also the funniest guy. And there aren't many people that have that combination that could be that funny and that serious and that credible all in one. He was the best, and he'll always be a part of me.
Well, we'll close this this terrific interview by asking a question we ask of all of our guests. And speaking of those by your side, we ask our guests, who would complete a dream foursome? Who would you play with if you could play one round of golf, whether those people are living or deceased? Who would they be? Who would the other three be? And where would you play that one round of golf?
That's a great one. I guess what I would take my grandfather. We'd bring him back to life. And my father's father, who died when I was a year and a half, he had a heart attack when he was playing golf on a course in New Jersey. So I really didn't get to know him over time. So I definitely have both my grandfathers. And then we got three people, right?
Yeah.
So I'd like my father to spend more time with his father. That would be kind of neat. But my dad, he's never taken up golf. You know, he moved to Florida and he said he was going to take it up and he hurt his back. So we're not going to invite him. We're going to leave him out. And, you know, we're going to bring in somebody, you know, big, you know, for the fourth person. You know, I'd want it to be, I don't know, you know, that pool that I talked about, we had John Rahm. I picked John Rahm in the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. And that was one of the great sporting thrills of my life. And then Scottie Scheffler and the Players, like, I love that. And the way he's playing right now. So I you know, and I love watching Rory and Xander and Jade, like everybody, like all these guys. So honestly, give me somebody in modern day golf. You know, it doesn't have to be Tiger. That'd be great. But it's not mandatory. I'll take my two grandfathers and I'll take whoever's free that day to join us to play around. And if we could play anywhere, probably it would either be Pebble Beach or it'd be Augusta, one or the other. Right? Like, can't go wrong with either one of those. I'm not going to be beggy or choosy on the fourth. I'm not going to be beggy or choosy on the place. Like, we're going to get this foursome done. I'm good with a lot of different combinations.
Well, and as we close, isn't that one of the great things about golf is that ability to bring people together? And it can be in a competitive environment. It can be in a social environment. It's a great game in so many ways, isn't it?
That would be the coolest thing to have, you know, both my grandfathers back for a round like that. That I would love. So, anyway.
Adam Scheffler, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here on Musings on Golf. Go get them with Mort still by your side in some way, at least spiritually, in a couple days at the NFL Draft in Detroit. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I appreciate having you. Really enjoyed it.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. I hope you all really enjoyed that interview with Adam Scheffler. As I mentioned, a real stand-up guy. And he's at the phase of his life, Bob, by the way, with a young kid, one youngster and another one. He doesn't have as much time to play, but boy, his passion for the game is pretty strong.
Well, he reminds me of our good sponsor, William & Harry, Rhett Butler. The ladies' golf shoe has come out. You had an opportunity just the other day to see that entire line at a golf show down in Florida. You told me they were very, very exciting. My son Lane, an avid golfer, has a pair of William & Harry's. He said to me, Dad, they're the most comfortable, solid golf shoe I have ever put on in my life. He's very particular on what he wears. So he said he feels good, looks good. I said, son, I can guarantee you to play better. So William & Harry, if you want to look good, feel good, and play good, William & Harry's the brand you want on your feet.
Well, and wait till people see the Albatross, which is the new shoe that he's bringing out that's made of ostrich skin, and the Viper, which is made out of python. You talk about a couple of shoes that you can't help but notice. And when you visit williamandharry.com, select your shoes and be sure to put in the code KECHARITY and the number 10. That's KECHARITY 10. Thanks again to Adam Scheffler of ESPN. Next week, Stacey Lewis, the 2023 and 2024 U.S. Solheim Cup captain, will be joining us here on Musings on Golf. For my guy, Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off. Thanks for listening to Musings on Golf.